Well, you are awfully brave souls coming out today. All this snow and craziness seems relevant, I think. We make a lot of the things, we make a lot out of the things that divide us as Christians, right? The Eucharist, the real presence, the resurrection, sexuality, gender. But what really divides the church, more than anything, is whether or not we wipe off our ashes on Ash Wednesday. For real, I'm not joking about this, actually, because it's a perfect metaphor for the great Christian divide. Is Jesus telling us to keep our faith a secret and personal? Or are we to share our faith with all the nations, as Jesus says at the end of this same book that we call Matthew? Both options make sense and both have support. But we need to make decisions, right? And come down on one side or the other. So does Jesus want us to wipe our foreheads or not? Right? I'm not sure. I do think, however, that this text makes more sense when given some other context. This is the middle of the Sermon on the Mount. The sermon that begins with, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," right? The Beatitudes. A sermon of reversals and comparisons. A sermon in which we are told about God's love for the weak and God's disappointment in the strong. A sermon in which the outcast is given a place at the table at the expense of the insider's double portion. It is a sermon that is not just about strengthening one's personal faith, but participating in the great shalom, the great kingdom of peace and justice. So when Jesus begins, "Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven," we are to hear that sense of reversal, that sense of comparison. The weak will have the kingdom as the strong have this world. So heavenly rewards are for those who do not benefit from this world. But Jesus links this to public piety, about doing things to be seen, with then receiving no reward in heaven. So what he's saying is that public piety brings temporary reward. It brings fame and success in our world. It brings success here, right? Because you come off looking holier and better than your neighbor. The slick observer will notice that Jesus is setting up this other hierarchy, a different one, a race to the bottom instead. Right? A race to prove oneself less pious than your neighbor is, right? So that you get further down that earthly list, so that you can get further up that heavenly list, right? Jesus even seems to reward that thinking at the end of this passage when speaking to not store up treasures on earth, but in heaven. Isn't that another form of this same game? Of success, of winning, of beating the other? Isn't it its own form of public piety, right? Isn't the competition to be more anonymous and more secretive with our giving more the present day competitive spirit than it is of Jesus' call to humility? As a priest, I'm often, and today, trying to tailor a message to you, right, so that you can hear it from where you sit. But I'm conflicted, as all of my piety is on public display. This seems to be a part of my job, in fact, to be publicly pious. Or at least show what piety can look like in my form, if we're being generous. I can't afford to run to the closet every single time I pray so that others don't hear me pray, because I'm praying in public. That's the point. Elsewhere, Jesus describes the problem of the rabbis who wear their phylacteries extra long. You know, the phylacteries being those tassels that adorn the bottom of the robe, right? But those are there so that when you are walking, you can feel those tassels, right? And you are reminded with every movement of your foot to be praying to God. That's what they're there for. And so Jesus doesn't condemn the phylacteries themselves. Chances are he wore them. Just the ones that are overly long or ornately decorated, the ones that are intending to show off, to be noticed, right? And to be noticed showing wealth. What if Jesus' condemning of public piety here is more like that? What if it isn't the piety itself, or it's even its public nature, but that it isn't actually piety anymore? It's advertising, let's say. What if the problem is not the display, but the act of displaying? This caused all sorts of problems in the church throughout our history, as we love our pretty things. We love all this stuff around us that reminds us of our faith and our tradition. All this stuff. All the stuff that just looks churchy. But in many ways, it has become a perverted piety. For it stops being the vessel for finding God and becomes the idol itself. This is why, during the Great Reformation, the reformers broke the stained glass windows, burned the hymnals, right? Destroyed the ornate chalices, right? Because these objects stole the people's focus from God. This is where simplicity of worship came into the church, as a remedy for a church that became too ornate and too precious, too beautiful. Of course, I would never condemn the violence of our history, and I think that those were great losses to the church. But it was a huge, perhaps needed, wake-up call. A church that worshiped the golden calf of its own beautiful God substitutes, something we aren't immune from. As much as we want our faith to be so cut and dry as, is this public or a private deal? It isn't. There's a reason we fight about this stuff. There's a reason why I began by saying this fight, public or private, showy or secret, is the true divide of the faith. And even the divide between the secular and the sacred and the church and the not church and the things going on and the people needing to call us, right? Because this is the divide that has endured from the beginning, from long before Jesus came around. It was already there, this divide, epitomized by the Pharisees and the commoners even. And it is a divide that our culture is greatly struggling with today, perhaps more than I have ever known. It's been most of my life. A culture that doesn't know how to describe us as individuals and as a community at the same time without those two being at conflict. The struggle to square a sense of freedom from our neighbors and responsibility to our neighbors. I mean, it's a question more pertinent than ever. Now, today you are called to a holy Lent, and I will in a moment invite you to remember what this season has meant to the church and to wrestle with it, with what it means for us today. And it was a time in which three things happened. Newcomers were formed and brought into the faith. notorious sinners were being prepared for reconciliation and to be brought back into the faith. And just one side note, notorious sinner is the word. Right? It means known, it means it was significant, and it means it was serious. Things aren't notorious unless they break community. Publicly. Big, big stuff. It's not just whether somebody doesn't like a decision made in church. It's big stuff. And yet it was a time, this is the season in which we figure out how to get those people back into the church anyway. And the third thing is that the whole faith community is to go through a time of mindfulness, to be thinking of repentance and reconciliation, because that's what's going on. So what it means to bring people in and back in, even those who have done things that have broken the community. So it is a time of wrestling with weighty issues of faith and of community, of justice and the very nature of God. To wrestle and prepare one another for greater unity. To heal the broken, to care for the weak, to help flip over and reverse this whole great system that is out of balance, that gives too much power to the powerful and too much poverty to the poor. This is the Lent we're being called to. This is what it means to do the work of faith. So all of our petty squabbles distract us from the actual work, from the actual practice of our faith. All of the divisions and the decisions to be on one side or the other help us perhaps understand part of what is going on, but they are prone to keep us from the work itself, to take our eyes off the prize. To wipe or not to wipe, that may be the question. But the answer Jesus gives us is, make the kingdom.